Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. You join us today on a very special occasion as we speak to the chef of the new Tunnel Club at the American Express Community Stadium. Not the Community Stadium anymore. The American Express Stadium. There we go. Before we introduce our guest, let's see who else we've got on the podcast today. We are joined by Curtis. How are you, mate?
I'm very good. Long time no see. Happy to be here with you wonderful individuals.
Indeed. And Sony from the US of A joining us for yet another podcast. How are you, Sony?
As you can tell, I look very tired and sweaty because I'm at work, but otherwise we're good.
We're good. And as I say, we're joined by a guest today, MasterChef, the professionals winner, Stephen Edwards. How are you, my friend?
I'm really good, thank you. Really excited for this evening.
Good. And so what we like to do, Stephen, to start the episode is we like to build our guests, if they're an Albion fan, as their profile, basically, as an Albion fan. So we'll ask you three questions, which I sent you earlier. I hope you've done your research. So what was your first ever Albion game?
So I had to look back on this one, but it was a good one. It was a home win against Rotherham in 2016 while we're still in the Championship. And what was really nice is it was my son's first game as well. So he was three at the time. And I think, you know, optimism was high even back then. And we've only gone on to bigger and better things since.
And what is your favourite Albion shirt? Sorry, I can't speak, Stephen.
I don't know whether it's controversial to say, but I love the 2020-21, the one with the thin pinstripes on it. Yeah.
Tom will absolutely love you for saying that. He loves that shirt.
I know it's not as classic as the one I'm wearing tonight, but I don't know. I love the collar on it, and I think it just looks like really cool.
Yeah, I rate that choice.
I'll take it. And what's your favorite Albion player of all time?
My favorite player is Bruno Soltor. I think he was a massive player in terms of getting us promoted, and he's a leader. It could be a controversial choice with him going to Chelsea, but I do think, you know, he's a Brighton legend and he's someone that I've cooked for as well. So it's nice to have that personal touch.
There you go. And I know Bruno, obviously, the way he left, that a lot of Brighton fans are quite opinionated on what they feel towards him now. But I don't think anyone can say anything against how he is as a person away from football. I think he's probably one of the best men going away from football, as I say. We'll leave that opinion to the side.
And we can't ignore everything he helped us achieve either. So.
Absolutely. That's written into the folklore of our football club now. And I think people eventually will just have to accept that anyway. As I say, that we like to do that as it builds the profile. And what was that sort of, as you say, your first game was with your son. Was that like a conscious choice that you wanted to have that with him and build those memories with him? Or did it just come about?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, football's been a big part of my life. And I think there's a difference between just watching it on TV and seeing it live. And especially for my son, I mean, he was just amazed at everything. I love the fact that he was taking everything in, the atmosphere, what happens before and after the game. Because I think when you're watching it on TV, it's easy to get distracted. And it's not as exciting. I think to see it live, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Sony had our first football game this year in the UK and we beat Wolves 6-0. So we call her our lucky charm. I'm sure you can vouch for that, Sony. The difference between watching it on TV, watching it in the stadium is just incredible.
Oh, absolutely. I actually just got to see them this past weekend and that was the best. Absolutely the best. Seeing them live on UK soil in their stadium was probably the coolest thing I've ever experienced. Did I expect that score? Not at all. Not in the least. And fortunately, I will be seeing them again on Friday because they're playing in New York and New Jersey. So
there you go. The Albion on US soil still baffles me. Let's talk about then, as I mentioned, you won the MasterChef, the professionals in 2013. Let's talk about that. So first of all, how did it all come about? And did you back yourself to win it from the start?
I mean, for me, again, leading back from football, I've always been quite a competitive person. And I think being a chef at the time, I was doing competitions not necessarily on national TV, but I like to put myself out of my comfort zone, kind of see where I stood along fellow professionals. And when the opportunity came about, it wasn't actually myself that put myself forward. It was actually my boss at the time. So that was kind of nice that he wanted me to do it. And it also took that pressure off me a little bit, because if I did go out early, I could just say it's his fault.
It must have been quite strange, though, seeing yourself on TV, like sort of for a few weeks. It must have been kind of an odd feeling.
It was really strange. And even hearing the sound of your voice or seeing what you look like on TV, it's not a normal thing to have to go through. But to be honest, I don't know. Maybe I was just really naive. When I applied to be on MasterChef, I didn't actually think of that side of things. I saw it more as a competition. And it was only really... Because it's filmed in the summer and aired in the winter, you've got 6 months of keeping it all a secret. So it almost didn't happen. And then when you are watching yourself on TV, it's amazing that feeling, like all your friends and family are literally just messaging you on that night and then nothing the next night. It was quite funny.
That's really cool to hear. So I've always found cooking shows very interesting. Obviously, we have like Hell's Kitchen, we have MasterChef, like US based, like Food Network here has all of these shows. Do you try to perfect your dish like every time? Like, do you expect 100% like perfection from you, or like how does that work out?
Well, the process is, for me, I mean, I've been a chef a long time. I kind of imagine the dish in my head to start with. And, you know, I think it's the best thing you can do as a chef or as a professional is, like, know when you've done something wrong. You know, you could easily just go along with it and be like, no, that's amazing, that tastes great, and almost convince yourself. But if you can actually taste something, be like, that's rubbish, it doesn't taste good enough, you can build on that and learn from it. But generally, I surround myself by fellow chefs that are able to critique me and not be offended. I think when you do something, it's like not let it be part of you, let it be part of your dish almost.
So what does that do, like when you're lining up to be told whether you've won or not, you're in the final and sort of, I guess your pride was half put on the line, obviously on national TV and everything like that. Is there that those nerves behind, or do you just back yourself anyway, even though you got that chance that you might not win? And what was it like when you were told that you were the champion?
Yeah, I think, again, comparing it to football, I love comparing things to football, is that I felt a little bit like Brighton in the competition. You know, I think the first round, like, I wanted to get through, I wanted to get further in the competition. But once I got into that semi-final, or even from the quarter-final onwards, I think everything was just a bonus. And I think there's no shame in saying that I went out in the quarter-final or semi-final. So I kind of just took it all in, and I was really excited to be there. With when it came down to the final three and that final day of cooking, I just gave it my all. As long as I didn't let myself down, I was happy. And to be honest, I just cooked the best I possibly could. And I think regardless of whether I won or not, I would have gone home happy.
So since MasterChef, tell us a little bit about how you've progressed since then and how you've sort of ended up where you are now at the Tunnel Club.
So since MasterChef, that was like 10 years ago, so a long time ago, there's a lot of like media and almost kind of going around the country, touring, doing different things, working with different companies, so that kind of takes care of the first year. I then wanted to do something with it, so my aim was always to have a restaurant, and I kind of started that by doing pop-ups, again, all over the country, kind of testing out different dishes or formulas before opening Etch in Brighton and Hove in 2017. And then 2 years later, I opened a restaurant in Richmond called the Bingham, Stephen Edwards at the Bingham, which is more a la carte led, whereas Etch is taster menus. So we offer like four, five, seven and nine course taster menus. And then I guess because of those two things is what started the conversation with Brighton and Hove Football Club, with this exciting new opportunity to create the menus for the Tunnel Club, which I'm really proud to be part of, because I've loved football from such a young age. I never made it as a professional footballer, so to tie it in with my skill of cooking. I think I'm just super proud.
And what can people expect from the new menu that you're about to put out?
So the menu itself isn't anything like overcomplicated. At the end of the day, we're part of that experience. I think Brighton football team are the show. That's what's drawing people to the club. And, you know, features like the leather heated seats and the position of the seats are nice, but the Tunnel Club itself is quite unique. There's only two others in the UK with Tottenham and Man City. So I think for the club, it just shows their ambition, not just on the pitch, but everything else. The menu itself is quite a classic, like a choice of three starters, three mains and three desserts. But we wanted to make it, again, part of my philosophy of using really local seasonal produce. Changing the menus up like every home game is important to me. But also the focus is, the concept behind the focus is really looking at like Trenchmore beef, which is a local product. So to have that featured on the starters and mains is really important. And almost like that steak and chips. I know that I don't want to dumb down steak and chips, but that's ultimately what football fans would want.
Yeah, exactly that. And as you mentioned in your previous answer, it's really exciting. There's only two other tunnel clubs other than the Brighton and Albion one. So for you as a Brighton fan, must be mega exciting. I imagine you'll be too busy in the kitchen to have a little peek round when the players are lining up. But how excited are you on those Europa League nights that, you know, you're going to have to, you're going to see this experience? And as you say, a very unique experience.
Well, you mentioned Europe. Like when this contract was being negotiated, it was literally just after Graham Potter had got sacked. No, not sacked. He got poached. And for me, it didn't matter where the club was, but there was that sense of uncertainty around how the club was going to move forward, what the expectations were, and you know what's. Well, I could kind of say I'm really lucky that what's happened since then has just made my job even better. To be part of that, you know, I don't know what I'm going into. We've got our first game next Sunday, and hopefully I get to see the players and kind of see what the Tunnel Club's all about from the outside, not just from the kitchen.
So speaking of Europe and the club and what have you, it must, you know, what's your overriding feeling on last season? You know, it's still crazy to even think about it now, sort of what we've achieved in the short space of time that we have. So, you know, tell us what you thought about last season as a whole.
I think we did overachieve. And I think what's important, and I think De Zerbi is almost like trying to say that at the moment, is we're not going to better that season. So it's aligning expectations, but I just couldn't be more proud that Brighton are in Europe. I think, you know, we've been in the Premier League, was it 6 or 7 seasons? And, you know, the first 3 or 4, we were fighting for our lives. Then there was that transition almost to be a bit more stable. And I think to go up and compete with the big boys has really taken us by surprise. I think we need to take this opportunity to show what we can do in Europe. It'd be great to see if we can progress as far as possible, but also balance it out with what's going on in the Premier League. And I think when talking to other Brighton fans and seeing what happened to West Ham, that's the sort of scenario that we could potentially be facing. Obviously, it'd be great to win, but like, you know, like balancing the Premier League and Europe is a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, exactly that. I'm going to go a little bit off script, guys. And I know that's going to throw you, but I'm very sorry. But I just had a really interesting idea in my head. And it stemmed from something Curtis said to me before the episode. And I think this could be quite fun. Stephen, if you don't want to do it, just tell me. We can edit this out. It's fine. Let's go through the Albion squad, goalkeeper to striker, and you tell me what dish they are.
What dish they are?
That'll be interesting.
This will be difficult. 11 dishes.
11 dishes. I'm going to test your dish knowledge. So Jason Steele,
I mean, he's a very good goalkeeper. I mean, we've realised that he's a very good goalkeeper. So I'd say maybe it's like an underrated dish that's out there that, I don't know, it's almost like a bit solid. Nothing too exotic, nothing too crazy.
he's very pie and mash, isn't he? You know.
I think I might need some help on this. I'm happy to go with pie and mash because it's a good staple, and like I said, it's you know what you're getting with him.
Yeah, exactly. Let's have it as an open discussion then, Stephen. Let's help you out here.
That makes me feel a bit more comfortable.
So, guys, let's think about Joel Veltman then. What sort of dish would he be?
Again, though, something steady and stable, you know, something kind of rich that carries the meal, I think, because he's so reliable, he's so sturdy and everything, as you mentioned. I don't know.
Curtis is my right-hand man in this discussion. I mean, you're really helping me out. I mean, it's a good discussion to have.
Probably a pudding.
I'll just
something.
Serve everything with mash. We could do sausage and mash, but then it's like a bit more than that as a country.
Yeah, but maybe shepherd's pie. Yes. I rate that.
I was just going to say shepherd's pie. I've actually had that.
Well, at least we all agree on that one.
Yes.
Lewis Dunk, the old reliable person, but captain. So this has got to be like upper echelon dish.
Just a roast dinner. Solid roast dinner.
I was thinking that, or like fish and chips, because he is.
I was going to say fish and chips. I'm like, all reliable, fish and chips, or
but
the Joe, Sunday
you know,
roast.
I know you were trying to say like a more upmarket dish, but like, I think fish and chips is like, when you speak about the UK and England, like fish and chips is up there as like probably the top. And especially being down in Brighton,
I'd
have him as my fish and chips.
Now, I'm gonna trigger Chelsea fans here and say Levi Colwill. I'm going off the last competitive squad we played with.
A pasta dish.
You think?
Like a carbonara or something like that.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. I think it's because I'm hungry, I think, but...
I'm hungry too.
All this talk of food, honestly, I'm going to have to end the podcast now. I'm joking. So, Purvis Estupiñán, South American. Ooh. Let's go a little bit exotic here. What are we thinking? I'm rubbish with food, by the way, so this is out of my...
He asked the question, Joe, and you're not even going to contribute. Dreadful.
I know.
Dreadful.
I don't know. What's the South American dish? I don't know.
I mean, I know a couple, but like, I can't really think of. I can think of like steak with chimichurri, but that's usually an Argentinian thing. That's bueno note.
Yeah, but I think you could kind of combine it into like South American flavors. Probably something with like avocado going on there, some coriander and lime. Could be like tacos potentially.
There you go.
I'm going to be breaking the doors down. I'm going to break the doors down at the Tunnel Club. I've got to eat there.
this has turned into not the best idea of mine.
Just a salivating over food at this point.
I know. Let's go with
desserts.
Like,
desserts. Everybody likes desserts, right?
Yeah, we haven't touched on desserts yet.
See,
Moises Caicedo, come on. Sweeten Moises Caicedo. Make him stay at this football club with the dish you choose next.
With a dessert?
I'm trying to think.
I mean, I've got like, for some reason, I've got like eat and mess in my head, but it can't be eat and mess because he's a very like tidy player. He cleans everything up, doesn't he?
So you could say he messes everybody else up.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. That could be a good way to look at it.
For some reason, the first thing that came to my head was a lime and pistachio cheesecake.
Ooh.
I think Curtis is going to be like my menu designer after this.
Yeah,
I know, you're going to have to recruit
Curtis, babe. You got any good ideas for desserts?
Yeah, the recruitment is real. Let's go with one more then, because as I say, this was silly decision of mine. Evan Ferguson, let's throw it out there.
Fergie.
This is easy for me. This is an Irish stew, just a big bowl.
I was thinking something with Guinness, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. That
big hearty bowl of Irish stew.
Fully the answer I was expecting. And I think we've got to do one more though. Roberto De Zerbi.
That could be the carbonara, but it could be pizza, something a bit.
A calzone.
Oh. Because it's a bit more exciting.
Different.
Yeah.
Exactly.
A lot of spice inside as well, you know, fiery.
Curtis, mate.
Fiery and peppery.
Fair play. You know your dishes, as you say.
Yeah.
As Stephen says, he's going to be in your emails after this.
What you don't know about me is I did study catering at college. So
you can tell.
Okay.
Thank you.
Happy days.
Love it.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. So let's stay on the subject of Roberto De Zerbi then. Stephen, how far can De Zerbi take this team?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. I think for me, it's about stabilising the club, like through these different tiers, because the way I look at the Premier League is almost three tiers of teams that are going to be in that relegation dogfight. Teams are that you're in the middle that you're Eddie Steady's, and then the teams at the top that are competing. And no one expects us to be in that last bracket. So as long as he's competing in some trophies and some cups and also being part of that mid-level, I'm happy. But from seeing De Zerbi and knowing what he's about, he is ambitious. And, you know, to come in his first season, he wanted Europe in his first season. He said that. And he's got that. I mean, that says it all about him, really. You know, even after wins, he's criticised the team. And I think that's a good thing for Brighton Football Club. I think this season will be the season to see what he's all about.
Just to go off a little bit off the script here as well, but I imagine that's quite similar to a kitchen. You know, you can have a really good service, but I imagine it's quite good to say, like, well, we could have done this a bit better,
yeah,
or that a bit better, and, you know, what have you. So, yeah, so it's a lot of parallels to make there as well.
100%. And I've always done these parallels between football and my career, because there's a lot you can compare to. And I think with De Zerbi, he's just got that. I mean, it's not just an attention to detail to want to be better, but he almost brings the team along with him. He's not being difficult for the sake of being difficult. He's doing it because he wants to be the best, and he wants Brighton to be the best they can be.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose putting together a good team is like making a decent meal or a good cake or a good dessert. You know, you have to have all the right ingredients to make this thing absolutely perfect and something you're really proud of. So
there's so many correlations to it. You know, but before De Zerbi came in, I mean, he's kind of come in at the right time. Whatever they're doing with their scouting and bringing players in, you could say there's a little bit of luck involved, but there is a philosophy. You know, other teams aren't doing what Brighton are doing. And I think that stability is good. Like, whoever decided to appoint De Zerbi needs a medal as well. Because although looking back, oh yeah, like at Sassuolo, however you say it, and when he was in Ukraine, like, I mean, he won the league there, but it doesn't necessarily translate to the Premier League, and he's just taking it by storm. I mean, he's getting Pep Guardiola excited.
Yeah, it's actually insane. Like, the levels that he's risen our football club to has been just a stunning thing to watch. And let's hope that he can build that up even more. Sorry, Sonia, I'll let you go.
No, it's fine. What are your predictions for the season? Do you think he can raise the profile of the club continuously? Do you, like, what are you thinking where we're going to land on the bracket?
Well, I keep talking about West Ham. And you know what? If that never happened, I probably would be a lot more confident and a lot more, you know, excited for the next season. But I think I truly believe, like, after watching the Chelsea friendly, like, that was exciting. Like, and I think that's what a lot of Brighton fans want. Even if we lose, but it's exciting and we're playing attacking football and scoring, there's not much more we could want. But I do think, I don't know, looking at the squad we've got, I know it's scary, like, without certain players in there, but even like the signing today, I think it's a great signing at centre back. Who can play like left back as well, but we're recruiting the right players. I think we've got the right manager, and I think we can. I'd like to say a mid table finish and getting out of the group stages in Europe would be seen as a success.
Yeah, I rate that. You've given me a great segue, because what we do need to talk about, guys, is the signing of Igor. Obviously, it's been widely reported that he was going to sign, and it's been rumoured here, there and everywhere. And now it is officially confirmed. I think he actually confirmed it himself first. I think he put the team's name in his Instagram bio. So cheers for that, Igor. It shows how much you want to play for this football club. So already a win in my books. Curtis, how excited are you to see this guy next season?
Mate, that guy needs a heavy goods license. Have you seen the size of him? He's massive. Huge, huge man. I mean, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with at the back, you know. But everything I've seen about him, he seems like a really consummate professional. And he's just going to be really sturdy. And I think, again, if it's someone that De Zerbi's interested in and the club's interested in, I trust it. So, yeah, I'm really excited for him.
Yeah, fully. And I'm going to lose Curtis Atena here because he had a bet on with his brother that we couldn't mention this player during this episode. So sorry, Curtis, I'll transfer it to you later. Sony, does this mean the end of our pursuit of Levi Colwill?
Absolutely not. I feel like something will happen. Something will definitely happen. I know that we are still in pursuit of him. I know that Chelsea, I think, is starting to back away from the whole Caicedo deal. Looks like he might stay, but never say never. It might happen, it might not happen. They might just say, here you go, have the money, have Levi Colwill, we're done dealing with you. Or they could just be like, haha, screw you guys, and then walk away. So anything's possible, really.
Yeah, exactly.
I must admit, though, Joe, I'm almost getting to a point where I'm a little bit tired of hearing about it. Like, I want something to happen or it not to happen, you know? And I just want it to just happen at this point.
I feel like we've been saying that since the very beginning. Like, we're always having constant battles on Twitter between, like, Brighton Bubble. We have, like, Fraudrizio, you know, posting things here, there, everywhere. And everybody's just getting bored. I'm getting bored. Like, I'm tired of seeing the same tweets over and over and over again. It's like, offer us an actual deal or just leave. Get out. Because this is starting to get really annoying.
Yeah, exactly. Stephen, you mentioned a really good point of looking forward to the season and it being scary without certain players here, there and everywhere. But it's been reported today that Chelsea are looking at other options and Moises Caicedo does have the possibility to stay at Brighton. I mean, what do you think that means for Moises? Obviously, he's 21 years old. Apparently, his camp are quite calm that he can stay at the same value and he plays European football this season. Do you think Brighton's chances of keeping Moises Caicedo are more than 50%, or would you still be a little bit worried?
I mean, I'm super listening to you guys talk about football. It's, you know, that's music to my ears, but like, I'm super confident that he's staying. I think Tony Bloom has proved that he's a tough negotiator. And I don't think anyone's going to bid 100 million for him. I'm not saying that's because I don't think he's worth it. Of course I do, but I just think the clubs that have done the deals early, the money's running out. I think when we talk about Colwill, I think you've got to look at Fofana in that bracket. I think there was a chance that there would have been a deal or a swap deal and some money. But Fofana's injury has just meant that I truly believe Colwill's staying at Chelsea now. And I do think Caicedo's staying at Brighton. I think it kind of puts everyone, I don't know, it puts me at ease when I see that.
Yeah,
but what I didn't realise as well was, I think at the end of the season, there was this rumour about De Zerbi having a pre-agreement with McAllister and Caicedo, and De Zerbi's come out and said that there was nothing for Caicedo. So that, again, gives me confidence.
Yeah, I think with De Zerbi's, obviously he's learnt English so quickly and it's props to him, but I think he's sometimes misquoted because of maybe there's a mistranslation between what he's trying to say. And obviously, at the end of last season, it was very much McAllister and Caicedo were going to leave, and they were very much mentioned in the same conversation all the time. So maybe there was a pact for McAllister to go, but it's been lost in translation that was for both of them, as you say, Stephen. So it's a really interesting thing for De Zerbi to come out and say, actually, nope. if Tony Bloom wants to sell him, he'll sell him.
The thing is, though, like, these things get quoted and they get quoted elsewhere and it gets twisted and turned more, and it's just football media can be really insipid sometimes. So
I, for one, was really, when I was looking at the Chelsea and Brighton press conference, because they were just tweeting it out the other day, I just liked the fact that he was like straightforward and honest about everything. Like, he was tackling reporters like head on when they were asking about the Caicedo thing, and he's like, no. Like, it kind of felt like he was getting unhinged a bit, because obviously he's not in England, so it's not like he has to play by those rules or whatever. US reporters are notorious for asking random ass questions. So I just like the fact that he just tackled it head on, said, hey, no, this isn't what I asked for. This isn't what I agreed on. This is what I'm going to say. And until Tony Bloom tells me otherwise, I'm still going to go ahead with my plans.
It's just so refreshing to have such a straight talking manager again. With Graham Potter, it was very much like here, there, everywhere. Like you had to read between the lines almost as to what he actually meant. It's very by the book. And I think that's what you expect from most English managers anyway, because they know the media and they know how much they can twist it. And it probably played in Graham Potter's favour sometimes because he got that respect from the media and they weren't going to push him too hard. But I think they're trying with De Zerbi to twist it in that way. And we all know the media are horrible people sometimes anyway. So yeah, it'd be really interesting. Let's talk about the players that we do have and are new to the club, so there's no chance of them leaving this summer. Yao Pedro. Now, I am very, very excited to see him play football again tonight. I thought he was absolutely excellent against Chelsea for the 45 minutes he was on the pitch. And I was talking about a little bit about the link-up between him and Undav. Now, something I mentioned, Curtis, I don't know if you watched the last podcast, but if there's a link-up between him and Undav, what about a link-up between him and Evan Ferguson? Now, that's something to behold. Are you excited to see our attacking options or getting the chance to show what they can do?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, as we were talking before the pod started, I was saying how good like Welbeck looked and things like that. And I just think he will just be a great partner to any of those attacking options. And, you know, I've always been an Undav supporter, you know, and I know it took him a while to get his stride going. So I'm happy to see him kick on. And I just think they're just going to be good partners, you know. But Pedro is a really exciting prospect. And I can't wait to see him at the Amex. It's going to be great.
Exactly that. Stephen, did you get a chance? Yeah. No, oh, yeah, exactly. Sony got to see him in person, the lucky thing. We're still yet to see him. We've got to wait till the 6th of August. But that's a very momentous day as Stephen's cooking his first meals at the Tunnel Club. So brilliant. Yeah. So if you've got a ticket for the Tunnel Club and you're a listener of the Albion Obsessed podcast, tell Stephen you say hi from us and try and sneak some passes for us and give them over.
Sneak out a filet mignon in your pocket or something for me.
Stephen, if somebody told you 2 years ago that Brighton would have all of these incredible attacking options, because that was something we very much lacked, what would you have said to them?
I wouldn't have believed it, to be honest. I think with Brighton, for me, you know, I've only really been part of the journey for the last 10, 15 years. So for me, I could kind of say I've been part of like the best part of it. And I think for a lot of Brighton fans, they've been with it from the beginning. And that transformation or that journey has been longer and better. But even for someone like me, I feel like this is beyond our wildest dreams. Like even when we got promoted from the Championship, it was almost like, how long is this going to be on for? You know, you're always thinking, actually, you know, don't get yourself too excited. But we were given stick for like our attacking options or the way we played. But now to look at it, I mean, Evan Ferguson, I think what another great discovery. I think the way he settled in settled into the Premier League is just phenomenal. I think he's like one of the most exciting young forwards in European football. Matoma, I think with people like Matoma, I'm surprised that clubs aren't in for him. But then as I get older as a football supporter, I think the agents just stir it up. I think Matoma's said he's not leaving, you know, internally. And that's why no one's coming. Why is no one just putting like a £45 million bid for him? I know it would get rejected anyway, but, you know, like when you're watching transfer stories unfold, there's got to be some interest, I think. I'm really excited about Brighton moving forward.
I think you're spot on about that, because there must be unrest from the player. They must have spoken to their agent to say, I want to leave. So start the feelers, tell Fabrizio, tell this person I want to go. And then it's reported, oh, Chelsea are preparing a £65 million bid. That unrests the player, that unrests the club, that unrests the fans. So you're right in what you say is Matoma's told De Zerbi, no, I'm going to be here next season as well. Then, yeah, clubs wouldn't waste their time almost and already have other sort of targets on their list anyway. Sony, as you say, you saw João Pedro in the flesh. You saw Dingra in the flesh for the first time as well. How were those attacking options when you were watching, obviously down to 10 men against Chelsea, but we still scored two goals and we still look dangerous? So it's really exciting times, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I actually got to see the game from two points of view. So I was up in the nosebleed seats in Philly, and I managed to sneak down to like bottom floor level seats with a couple of the supporters. And, you know, seeing that penalty kick by João Pedro was pretty gnarly. I actually have video of it. I took really good footage of it. Seeing that, seeing like all the attacking options, like we're clearly there. Like, obviously this is a friendly, we don't read into these things, but the fact that our players are doing their absolute best to, you know, push and try to get rid of the other team, and so in order to score, is it's great. I feel like you guys are going to have a really good time just watching them just play week after week after week. Like, we're enjoying them for about 3 days and that's it. But I'm excited for you guys to see them in person and out on the field for a Premier League game.
Joe, I mean, if you told me 6 years ago, I mean, it's still mad, obviously, that we've got these amazing youth players coming in, but we would have Milner, Lallana and Danny Welbeck in our team. I'd be like, get out of town, shut the front door. I wouldn't have believed you. So I do regularly look at the team and go, wow, like, how do we have these people? I know they're older statesmen, I guess you would refer to them at this point, but they're still so solid. And like, Lallana is such a leader, and I think Milner has the potential to be exactly the same type of positive force out there. So it's just so exciting.
It's, I mean, crazy, sometimes you do need an older figure in like your team. Like, I know when in baseball comparison, because I'm a baseball person, when we were starting to get ready to win the World Series, we had older people. We were actually one of the oldest teams to win the World Series, you know? And sometimes you need older players to kind of rein in like the newer ones and being like, you know, being a mentor to them, helping them out with techniques or whatever. So it's nice to see, you know, not just young players, but just like a good mix of ages, just doing the thing.
Yeah. Go, Nats. Interested. Go Nats.
Let's go Nats. Let's go Nats.
Stephen, does that translate to the kitchen as well? Do you have like young and upcoming chefs as well as your experienced figureheads? And does that same dynamic work with, you know, people teaching the younger guys, but also these younger guys having fresh ideas?
100%. I think any job where you have to work as a team, you need people with different perspectives and that have gone through different experiences as well to kind of bring the team together when things don't go your way or problem solve and move forward. And I think that's one of the best things I've seen from Brighton, even though we're seen as this young, exciting team. Actually, we're still signing players over 30. We're signing players like today, that's, I think it's 24, 25. So that mid-range, and also young players. And I think that for me is the perfect makeup of a team, is using different skill sets, different ages, different experiences and bringing them together. Because when you look at a team like Chelsea at the moment, they've just gone for one type of player, and that's a young player with potential. I worry about their dressing room and who's going to step up when things don't go right. Or if they lose two games in a row, who's going to stop them from losing the third? And I think you need that balance. And it's the same in the kitchen, to answer your question, Jai. I think you need people of all levels of experience that make a team and then make it a breeding ground for the younger chefs or players to come through and learn from the older ones.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I'm probably just as excited to see James Milner play football as I am to see João Pedro play football. You know, we've watched James Milner in the Premier League for, years, like 21 years he's been in the Premier League for, I think. I don't know if it is that long, but he started at Leeds as a really, really young lad, and now he's playing for our football club. You know, I remember his heyday at Man City and prior to that, Aston Villa, and, you know, to have him at our football club, you could say we're in England international retirement home. But let's hope that's not the case.
No, but I was more excited about him than Pedro. And I'm glad that Pedro's proved me wrong in that. I mean, he's obviously got a long way to go, but in the friendly against Chelsea, I thought he was the best player on the pitch. Mm. But when we signed Pedro for that fee, I was thinking it doesn't seem Brighton. You know, it seemed a bit too much.
It's a lot of pressure to put on a young lad as well, isn't it? Whenever we've paid big fees, it's never really translated. I think Adam Webster obviously done really well for us, and a couple of our other Premier League signings.
Like Ali Reza, Jahanbash.
Malpay. Yeah. Like obviously, I know Malpay's our record Premier League goal scorer, joint with Glenn Murray. But, you know, he didn't quite reach that level that we expected. So I think you're spot on, Stephen, about that expectation from João Pedro.
Well, I want him to prove me wrong, you know. Like, but when I saw it, I was like, please don't go down this road of spending money, you know, more money than we have on a single player. I'd rather do clever business, which is what Brighton have been known for. But to see him against Chelsea, I was really, really surprised how far along he is.
Yeah, exactly that. As you say, we get to see him play again. You hope that he proves you wrong. We get to see him play again tonight. Obviously, this episode will go out after the game has happened. So we're going to predict the outcome. So we could have egg on our face come tomorrow afternoon. But who cares? Let's do this. So, Curtis, what are your thoughts ahead of the Brentford game? And are you confident that the lads can get some good results behind them and some momentum into the season?
Yeah, Brentford are always a funny team to play because I actually feel there's a fair amount of similarities to be held there with Brentford, just the way that it's run and things like that. Clever signings, those sorts of things. But I think it'll be close, a lot closer than the Chelsea game. Let's think. I could see it being like a 2-1 to us or like a 3-2 or something close like that. So I'm going to go for the 2-1 Brighton. So,
as I say, I hope we can win to get some momentum. I know pre-season doesn't really mean anything, and the Zerbi has said it's more about the performance than it is the result. But wins do mean something in a footballer's mind, and that momentum is absolutely key going into the Premier League season. Sony, what are your thoughts ahead of the Brentford game tonight?
I'm still going to go say 2-1 Brighton. It's going to be close. The Chelsea game was kind of a fluke because we were down one guy. So, of course, they were going to be able to score the goals. And I'm really thankful that we were able to pull that back and make it a little less lopsided. But if hopefully, barring nobody gets kicked out again, 2-1.
I like that. Stephen, first of all, who are you hoping to see in the starting 11? And what are you thinking for the scoreline tonight?
I mean, obviously, I'd love to see Pedro again. I think if he can prove me wrong, score another goal. I think with Brighton, even though with Brentford, I think Curtis mentioned, we are quite similar. I think Brentford, I don't know, in my head, they always seem a little bit more defensive, a little bit more tight at the back. With Brighton, you know we're going to score goals, but you know we're going to concede them as well. So, I mean, my first initial feeling was 2-2. But then, for some reason, I know what De Zerbi is like, and he's not going to like losing to Chelsea, and he's not going to be happy with a draw. I think I can feel a win, and I'm going to say 3-1.
And there's no Ivan Toney to strike the fear in us this time anymore. So hopefully he doesn't. Well, obviously he won't, but hopefully no other Brentford striker will give Dunk the same.
Joe,
issue.
What's your prediction then?
45 minutes into the episode. And talk, then decides, no, you're not going to complete it. Bugger off. So here we are. Sorry, Stephen. That is not very professional of me. Curtis, yes. Can you ask my predictions again, please? And I can edit all that whiff-waff out.
Okay. So, Joseph, what's your prediction for the Brentford game tonight? It's exciting. What do you think?
Yeah, so hopefully I'm going to get through this without talk. Doing me in. But okay. I hope to see Lewis Dunk play. We've seen him pictured with the fans, etc., and in training. So hopefully.
Was he wearing anything in those pictures, Joe?
Yes, he was wearing a lovely little sports bra that was monitoring his numbers. There was a point to me mentioning that he was wearing that because obviously it shows that they're monitoring if he can play or not. So, you know, I'm not just being a weirdo. I hope to see him play. I hope to see Alpedro play. I hope to see Nciso play. Just all the guys getting all the minutes. Hopefully,
Mo Dahoud, definitely not mentioned.
Mo Dahoud and Moderhood and Caicedo in the middle together is going to cause fear across the whole Premier League if we can keep Moises Caicedo.
So that guy is tall. Like, he's really tall.
He's quite a unit, isn't he? I like it. That's what you need in the midfield sometimes. But as I say, I'll go for a 3-1 win for the Albion, I think. So, yeah, that's my prediction. Okay, let's go on to fan questions. Well, they're not really fan questions, actually, because two of them are from people that are on this podcast. So they're actually podcast questions, Stephen. The first question is from Dan, who's one of our hosts here at the Albion Obsessed podcast. And he says, can I have some passes to the Tunnel Club, please?
I mean, this is like the most common question I get asked when talking about the Tunnel Club, and I hate to break it to everyone, but I'm not in control of that aspect. I think you need to find yourself another contact at Brighton Football Club.
There you go, Dan. You're going to have to email Paul Barber, I'm afraid. Yep. And Sony, I'll let you ask this question because it was your question.
Yeah. So what is your favorite dessert to eat? And what is your favorite dessert to make? Those are like two completely different things.
No, that's a really good question. I think my favorite one to make is like a classic lemon tart, just because there's a lot of skill involved, a lot of things that can go wrong.
What did you call me?
Sorry, Curtis?
I said, what did you call me, Stephen?
A lemon tart. No, but like a classic lemon tart, you basically put the egg mixture in the tart case in the oven, and you want that nice wobble. If you overcook it, you get a crack in your tart, which is never good.
It's getting X-rated on the pod, everyone. X-rated.
I know. But actually, funnily enough, that was like my favourite dessert to eat as a kid, but it's a bit too sweet for me now. I'm a big like chocolate fan. I love chocolate desserts, and it's something that we're always going to have on the menu at the Tunnel Club. It's like something just like a little bit savoury. I think with chocolate, you can go a bit more savoury and a little bit off-piste. But recently we had like chocolate with Bailey's ice cream, which I thought was a little bit unusual, but really tasty. Salted caramel on there as well.
So good.
Love that.
And we have another question from Tony. And Joe, is this your Tony or is this some other Tony?
No, it's another Tony.
Oh, it's a different Tony. Okay, what is your go-to Tesco's meal deal? I told you it'd be tough. So, if you had to choose.
That's a good question. I mean, I normally go for one of the wraps. So, like hoisin duck. Make sure I get the kettle chips, salt and vinegar, if they're involved in the deal. To be honest, I'd always try and look at the most expensive things to put together to make sure I get the best deal. But yeah, hoisin duck wrap, salt and vinegar crisps, and probably a Ribena.
Good man, that's a good combination right there. It's a chef's combination. It really is. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been just great talking to you about the Albion and just your passion in the kitchen and whatnot. So thank you very much for your time.
No, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on, and I want to wish Brighton all the best for next season.
Fantastic. Hopefully we can get you on again at some point just to talk about the next season or what have you. So.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So thank you very much, guys. Thanks for watching. And we'll catch you down the road.